you know, it happens to everyone that someone says like, oh, where is your arm or something, like not in a nice way. I think even people say that now, I still hide my hand a little bit. I mean, I definitely did it all the time. But climbing made me like, I'm actually proud of it because it can do so much.
Yeah.
And since then, I hide it somewhat less. So I was 24 when I climbed for the first time, or 25, something like that. I experimented with different things and I found my way mostly on my own. It's an interesting journey. Like when I started, I thought like I won't be able to climb higher than maybe a 6A, which is like a 6 plus here. Like it's the level I warm up on.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm projecting 8 plus, which is I think like 7A-ish.
So, well, you are now climbing more than better than you thought at the beginning when you started.
That's definitely. Cool. Yeah, it's really cool. And I think it's still there is some room for improvement.
You heard the Hungarian paraclimber Melinda Wieck speaking. She's my guest in this episode. It is episode 27 of Bin Weg Bouldern. My name is Juliane Fritz. I am your show host. And Melinda, you might have seen her if you have watched the IFSC World Championships 2018 in Innsbruck. Melinda is a paraclimber and she won a silver medal in her category last year. But the first time I saw Linda, that was in my main bouldering gym in Berlin. And it was super interesting to watch her climb very technically and very balanced with one hand and with a stump on the other hand. In the interview, you will hear that Melinda uses the words people with disabilities, and then she adds, or people with different abilities. And if you could see her climbing, you would definitely know what that means, because she has such good climbing abilities. We will talk about that in the interview. Also about the World Championships, about the time she came to Berlin where she found no events for paraclimbers, but then she decided to start them on her own. Melinda became a climbing trainer and successfully started a paraclimbing event in Berlin. Sounds interesting? I think so too. So have fun with my talk with Melinda Wieck that I recorded last year in December, by the way, so don't be confused when Melinda says this year when talking about the World Championships. Before we start, I would like to inform you about my Steady campaign. With Steady, you can financially support, for example, your favorite podcaster. So if you like my podcasts and have the possibility to help, choose one of the three supporter packages on my Steady site. The link is in the show notes, and I will give you some goodies and podcast extras for that. But I also have to say, even if you can't help via Steady, thanks to all my listeners, all my followers, that you are there and give me so much nice feedback. Really, thank you so much. The start of this episode is a bit weird, I must admit. At the end of the interview, Melinda Wieck said, Juliane, you didn't ask what paraclimbing is. And I was like, why should I? Isn't that clear? And she said, no, some people think it has something to do with paragliding. So then I asked, in the end, what paraclimbing is, and I will start with this short bit now. This is Melinda explaining paraclimbing.
So it's basically just climbing, like every other person does it, but climbing when you are missing something from your body or your functioning of your body. So like me, you could have not have fingers, or you could have some neurological illness or something like that, that makes it not possible to move your body. So something is missing from your body. You don't have two functioning hands, two functioning legs and a functioning core, but part of it is not functioning, and that makes climbing like all the same climbing, but the movement ability of the people who do it is different. Some people prefer to call it adaptive climbing rather than paraclimbing. I think both are fine.
And there are different categories in paraclimbing. So when I watched the IFSC competitions, there was... What's the name of your category?
It's underarm amputee. AU2 is the abbreviation.
Okay. So how many categories are there?
Oh, at least 10, I think. Yeah? There are three different vision impairments, depending on the degree. There are three different neurological range of motion, like limitations, something like that. There is the underarm amputee and then the above arm amputee, but that category almost never has enough athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is the leg amputee. There are very few people who are missing two legs, but that would be probably in the seating. So people who cannot move any of the legs, that's a separate category as well. And I think that's it. That's already quite some. So I think it's exactly 10.
Okay.
And
okay,
then
that's a lot.
Men and women separately. So if every category would be there, then there would be like 20 different competitions. But it doesn't happen. So for the world championship, you need at least 6 athletes in the category. If one of them is incomplete, then they will merge it to a higher category. So like the above arm amputees would be merged together with the lower arm amputees.
Okay.
And if there wouldn't be enough arm amputees, of which most people are actually born like that, and very few lose their arms, then they would be merged with the middle category of the neurological like range of motion things. So fairness is only to some extent something that's there.
Yeah.
And because we don't yet have the numbers to make it more comparable, then they have to start merging things that are not so comparable.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
But if you watch the competitions, like the same routes are used for like things that would be like reasonably similar.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice that if you can compare, okay, so how far does each category go and how comparable it is, how much they can do to climb the same routes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now we already know a little bit about paraclimbing competitions. There will be more in the full interview starting now.
Welcome to my podcast, Melinda Wieck. Wieck was right. The right pronunciation.
It was the right one.
Wieck. Good. Melinda is a paraclimber. And if you could see her, you would see that she has no left hand, but she has a right hand. Still, she's climbing. Maybe you've seen her in the last Climbing World Championships in Innsbruck, where she made the second place in her category. And I saw her for the first time in my bouldering gym in Berlin, where she climbed stuff that I was not able to climb. So now you have the picture. Hello, Melinda.
Hello.
I'm very happy to meet you and that we can do this interview. And I would like to find out more about you, about paraclimbing too, about being there at the World Championships. And I want to thank you that you invited me 2 days ago to go climbing with you. You taught
me.
It
was my pleasure.
You taught me rope climbing. Yeah, it was really nice. When I met you and asked you to do the interview, you told me that you were a little bit sad that in my podcast I always talk about bouldering and not about climbing.
Yes.
So what was your feeling when you listened to my podcast? Did you not like that I like make a difference between climbing and bouldering, or what was your feeling?
I like your podcast a lot. And the interviews were like all really cool, and I very much enjoyed it. But I was like, yeah, but most of these people are actually also climbing on, you know, with rope. and you always just use the word bouldering.
Yeah.
And me as a climber, I identify with the word climbing and not so much with the, like, bouldering is an exclusive, because if I say I'm climbing, I can climb on the wall, but I can also climb in a bouldering gym.
Yeah.
So for me, that's more inclusive.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, maybe you should, it would be nice to hear this word more often, because that's what I'm identifying with.
We will talk about climbing a lot in this interview. A bit about bouldering too.
Yeah, we feel.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay,
because
good.
I also told you that, but you know, I'm primarily a climber and not a boulderer.
Yeah, but you know, my first connection with you was in the bouldering gym.
Yeah. In the winter, I do admit I do more bouldering.
Yeah. Okay.
But I enjoy both of them.
Well, I just was rope climbing for 2 times now. The second time was with you. And yes, I enjoyed it, and I was not as afraid as when I was climbing the first time. So, well, big success for me.
And for me too.
Great. And what you told me too is that you needed to build up some self-confidence, and that you somehow did this with climbing. So I just somehow want to find out in this interview how you build up your personality, your self-confidence through climbing. How did you get to the world championships and everything? I want to know.
Okay.
And I, of course, want to also find out how you grew up, and especially how you grew up with only the right hand. So what did it mean for you when you were young? Like, let's start. You are born in Hungary.
Yeah, in Budapest.
In Budapest. Did you grow up in any climbing environment, in the climbing family or anything?
No, not at all. So I grew up on the hills of Budapest, and I was thinking about like how I came to climbing, and actually already as a small child, I really liked climbing on things. So we have one of these viewing points on the hill, and, yeah. and it's a bit like a small castle or something. So it's made of rocks and it's slabby. So I always, you know, I always started climbing on it, but I was small. So like climbing all the way up would have been like if you fall and then you're not ending up at the bottom, but way below because it was on a hill.
Yeah, and you
so
had no
I didn't
pads.
Go up, but I really always wanted to do it. And already like as a child and, you know, just playing around on rocks. We have caves and there around there also rocks and trees and stuff. So I always liked this type of thing. I just didn't know that it was something like, you know, that it's a sport. I mean, climbing in Hungary is still like not very mainstream. So the first time I heard that someone was actually like doing something like that, it was that one guy just died in the Alps. Like, you know, one guy same age as I am.
Yeah,
I was like 18 or something. I was like, okay, sounds dangerous. And yeah.
But you still wanted to try it.
No, at the time I didn't know it was possible. Like I didn't know that there were like climbing gyms or like how you do this and stuff like that. It's just I like climbing on, like playing around on rocks and trees and stuff.
Yeah.
So the first time I actually went with some friends to try out climbing, I really liked it, but it was also just a bit too exciting in not necessarily the best way. Like I really enjoyed the movement and to get up on the wall. And I thought it was like pretty cool that I could also just do it. But at the same time, it was too much excitement.
Yeah.
So, and then I considered starting it, but didn't really fit my life. And then just a few weeks later, also a very good friend's best friend died while rock climbing in the Alps. Something with the rope or something. I'm not sure. And that was like, maybe not then, at least not now.
Yeah.
And then a few years later, I just was like, okay, I'm ready. I really want to do this. And a friend was like, yeah, maybe he wants to do it, but he needs a partner. And then with a friend of mine, we just decided that we'll do the course. And it was like a question mark for me whether I can belay. Because in Amsterdam, people use the tube.
Yeah. And it's hard for you to use that.
I mean, it's possible actually, but German expressions. So if you do tunneling, like what I was teaching you, then it's possible. But in the Netherlands, they do a different method where you have to grab with one hand and grab with the other one. And then you bring the hand up and you needed two hands for that method. They still do it that way. But like that way, I cannot do it. So at the course, it turned out that there is the Grigri that we used. And that's possible for me. Yeah. So that was like just like really great that I'm not dependent on someone.
So now we are already in the climbing.
Yeah, yeah. So we can go back.
I wanted to go back to how you grew up. If growing up with just one hand somehow, sometime made you feel like you are not able to do the same things as other people do, like at your age or anything.
I mean, so I know quite some people who have the same handicap in Hungary, because there was an association or foundation that organized a lot of events for us. And I do see, especially now in retrospective, that in the environments that some of the children grew up, that was like really like supportive, and they became like really self-confident people. And I was like a really shy person. Yeah. maybe it's also because of my personality, definitely, but also I think the environment. So also in my class, there were very few girls, many guys, and they are not necessarily the most supportive and understanding beings.
Yeah.
So already then I was like really shy and just spending a lot of time alone and stuff. And I don't have brothers or sisters, and I so don't really know my father either. So I grew up with my mother, and she's also not the most believe in yourself and you can do this type of person. It was more like you have to have like a safety plan, and you have to have like an occupation that you can find a job with, and to study, and to some level. And when I left Hungary to go to the Netherlands to study, I think I was like a really shy person, and you know, not like, I was pretty stubborn all my life, but socially I was just super shy, and asking people to do something for me or something is not really, it was hard. You know, it's like, I also know some people that are like completely the opposite. They were always like super social and just had a lot of fun, and they didn't like, you know, it happens to everyone that someone says like, oh, where is your arm or something, like not in a nice way. And so they learned at home that, yeah, you just have to ignore those. I think even people say that now, I still hide my hand a little bit. I mean, I definitely did it all the time.
Yeah.
But climbing made me like, I'm actually proud of it, because it can do so much.
Yeah.
And since then I hide it somewhat less. So
you felt like when you were a child that you had to hide it somehow. And when did it turn? How old were you when you finally found out, okay, I can do stuff, I can climb, and I can show my body.
I did stuff before as well, but like climbing was something that like that was really close to my heart. But so I was 24 when I climbed for the first time, or 25, something like that. I actually don't quite remember. But then when I really started, I was 30, which is quite late.
Yeah,
like, you know, to want to be really good at it.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true. Then you have really developed quickly. So that's
I know people who do it much quicker, but of course with a coach, and I developed by myself. So I experimented with different things, and I found my way mostly on my own. So that's a big difference as well. I mean, it's an interesting journey. Like when I started, I thought like I won't be able to climb higher than like maybe a 6A, which is like a 6 plus here. Like, it's the level I warm up on.
Ah, yeah. And what do you climb now?
So, like, I mostly climb indoors because there are not so many rocks around.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, most people go outside, and that's where the grade you say you climb. Yeah. So I can only tell mostly, like, indoor grades.
Yeah.
So I can climb now a few of the 8s.
Yeah.
Not all of them. Depends on the climbing call. We have a nice route setter at our gym, which is not power-based, but more technique. And if I would go to a different climbing call, maybe it would not be the same level, but maybe it would be.
But you could learn.
Yeah, you can adapt. So I try to go to different gyms to get exposed to different type of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm projecting 8+, which is, I think, like 7A-ish.
So, well, you are now climbing more than and better than you thought at the beginning when you started.
That's definitely. Cool. Yeah, it's really cool. And I think it's still, there is some room for improvement.
Great. And outside of the climbing world, are there still things or situations that you think you can't handle because of your arm? Or like, did the thing that you learned for yourself with climbing, does it also work in the non-climbing world?
So I always thought that, like, if you do sports or something, like, you learn something from that you can also apply in work life or like others, like the non-physical part of life, studies, work, things like that. And I think it's true. One of the first lessons that I learned that is, I think, applicable to other things is that, like, if you just cannot find a solution the way you are looking at it, then you just have to change your perspective and just look outside of the box a little bit. And then you'll hopefully or probably will find another way that works.
Yeah, so that's something that you learned from climbing. That's cool. When you said that you want to climb, like when you told it to your mother or friends, what were their reactions?
My mother still doesn't like it. My friends, very few of my friends actually climb. I mean, friends from before, like my friend with whom we started together. And we still go sometimes climb outside as well. Or we are going in 2 weeks. No, less than 2 weeks to Mallorca to climb together. So that will be cool because we haven't really been climbing. I think 2 years ago or 3 years ago was the last time. So I don't know. I think some people find it like cool, and they are proud of me. I think so. Yeah, they are proud of me. Probably, I don't know.
Your mother might be proud too.
Yeah, my mother is proud, but she doesn't like it.
Well, sometimes my mother doesn't like it too that I go bouldering because she also thinks it's dangerous. So. That's what mothers do sometimes.
Yeah. And then she told me that we were somewhere outside and I saw these beautiful mountains and I was like, I really want to climb them. I was like 18 at the time or 19. And yeah, of course, if you see a mountain, you want to be on the top of it.
Yeah. And you also just told me that what you like about climbing somehow is climbing higher and higher. So you like the really long routes.
Yeah,
So what is the fascination? Is the fascination looking down and seeing ants on the floor?
No, I'm a bit afraid of heights. It took some time to get used to doing like multi-pitch routes and just belaying from not the ground but from higher up. You know, it's like you are in the mountains and you see something and it's like just so inviting. You just want to really go to the top because I don't know, the air is nice, better, the view is nicer there. Yeah. I don't know. I think some people have it and some people don't have it. Like if I talk to Ruul, my husband, about it, he doesn't have this feeling at all. So I know that not everyone has it.
But you told me also that it's like a meditation for you.
Yeah, definitely. The climbing movement.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you only think about the way you are moving from one, like where you are, to the next hold or go up on the wall. And there is really no space for thinking about other stuff. And I think that's like really mentally relaxing. And in a way, I think it's like meditation. So like when you climb hard, you also have to think about it. You have to breathe. So that's an additional thought, but it's also something that helps you climb. So it's really meditation, you know, like breathing exercise.
Do you remember a moment when you started climbing, when you were really sure that this is the thing that you want to be doing the next years and want to become better at?
I think already when I started, I knew that I want to become better. Like I was hooked on climbing, I think. Like after I did the top rope course, because everyone climbs top rope in the gym where I started in Amsterdam, it was like we went at least like twice a week. And since then, I think I only climb more per week. But it was immediate. And what was also like kind of cool is that that I could climb at the same level as my friend, like who had all body parts and stuff. And I think it's still kind of similar, though she has other hobbies and stuff. So she's not focusing as much on climbing as I do. But it was nice in a way that, you know, we were at the same level. And I didn't feel like I'm not as good or something like that. And I felt like this is something I'm good at and I really enjoy. So I think that gives a lot of confidence as well.
Yeah. But was there something in the beginning that you felt afraid of or Were there barriers for you where you thought, how can I manage this with one hand?
No, I can. I'm not doing it with one hand because I use both hands.
Yeah.
Like I don't have fingers on my left hand, but I still do have like a small wrist and a small palm or something like that. And like using sport tape on it, it makes it more sticky. So I can hold a lot of things, but it's it's far more balancey, and I have to find a body position where I can lean in the hand so that it doesn't slip away. I think my feet technique is because of that a little bit better than an average climber's, and I could really just find solutions to very many things. I mean, the only thing maybe I was afraid of was heights at the beginning, but no, not really at that time. Sometimes there were some moves that I thought, okay, maybe it's not possible, but then you do something else, and that was not really a big issue. Like, definitely not something that I was afraid of.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I climbed with a rope. I didn't boulder at the beginning at all. I mean, there is a small bouldering part there, so we sometimes warmed up on it, but we always preferred climbing with the rope. And there it's like, you know, you don't have to be afraid of falling. You can just try anything, and you can keep trying, and you will not get injured. And I think we are both very persistent people, so we fought our way always up to the top, no matter how long it took.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I was like, okay, I'll just keep this move, take another hold sometimes. But most of the times we just fought it all the way.
Ah, good. What I was also asking myself is, do you have to take care that you balance your muscles right? Because maybe you, you use one arm more than the other arm, so you have to do some extra training to keep the balance?
Yeah, it's definitely true. I use different muscles on both sides. I use far more of the triceps on the left side than on the right side because of the lead climbing. So you have to keep, I have to keep somehow myself on the wall while I'm clipping. Most of the times with right, but sometimes also with the other hand. So I'm practicing that quite a bit now to clip with the fingerless hand.
Okay. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, it's fun. bit of physics and balancing. Like climbing. So yeah, so it's very different muscles. Also in the back, when I do the rolling and stuff, then I notice that different spots are sore. Like the first years I was only just climbing and didn't do a lot. Then I noticed that maybe I should do some some more exercises and you know, start training if I want to be serious about climbing and I want to improve. And now I also, I wanted to actually show you the training hook that I have. So I have a hook that I can put on my arm. And then if I hang on a ring or on the pull-up bar, then my arms are mostly the same length. So I could also do some like campus board or something, like just some finger training, so that one hand is like, obviously I only train the right finger.
And is, but is it a hook that was made specially for you?
So that's my training device. So with that, I try to train the shoulders because I thought, like, especially the left shoulder is not that mobile as the right one, because I always have to keep things to my body because I don't have the fingers. So if I want to hold something, I always have to get things between. So the things have to be between my hand and my body and push the things to my body to hold them, which means that certain movements, like this inward movement, is far more often done, and the outward movement is like very, very limited. It was always been since I'm a child. So yeah, for that it's also really good to do these shoulder exercises, and especially like scapula pull-ups and stuff like that to strengthen the shoulders. That way I can also do some pull-ups.
Okay.
Don't do too many, because I would rather do push-ups, because that's better for my back.
Yeah.
So I try to do some antagonist training also, then try to do it in a balanced way so that both sides are equally used.
So, but you never got seriously injured because of imbalances or anything?
Not because of imbalances. Okay. My lower back got always very tight because my muscle structure, like my body structure, is really tight. I'm not flexible, and I wasn't doing enough stretching, or maybe I wasn't doing any. Like the most serious injury I got was that I was on a slab on tiny holds and I got a cramp in my back and I couldn't move afterwards. And I couldn't sit for over 3 weeks. Walking was painful, and it was really hard to get out of the climbing hole. So that was a bit silly. But luckily, I ended up in the hands of a really good physio in Amsterdam, and he explained to me what the problem was. Because I waited a few days, because, you know, sometimes you have to wait and it goes away. But because it was only muscular. So like the muscles just contracted, and that's why I couldn't move. So I should have just gone immediately. But anyway, so he massaged it out, and it improved. And since then, I'm paying more attention to stretching. Yeah,
good. Very good. Are there any role models that you have in the power climbing scene? If you watch other power climbers to see how they do it, if you can adapt something.
Yeah, sure. I mean, so it's kind of funny. Because it's not really a role model, but there is one British guy who is like really strong and super jumpy. And when I looked at like the videos from the World Championship and compared how he climbed and how number two climbed, who is also like got almost to the same spot, you see the difference of the confidence of the two people. And I was like, usually when I fall on a route, it's because I get stuck somewhere. I just don't know how to go on. And I'm like trying to find a solution. And, you know, a solution that's not super strenuous or something like that. But it's a bad approach, because I should just, you know, be strong enough and confident enough to just go for like a move that maybe I think it's not like for sure that I can do it, but maybe as 50% or something, and just commit to it. And then I always hesitate if I don't see a solution that would be like low energy. So like it's definitely like this confidence stuff. And when you look at someone who is climbing with confidence, and that was something like, oh yeah, that's how, in the direction in which I would like to develop myself as well.
So dynamic moves are something that you don't do too much?
I'm doing more now than I was really a static climber. And now I'm more dynamic and I'm trying to work on it. I'm still not great at dynos. I mean, I think my shoulder, it's not strong enough to, if I just jump into something without both arms on something, then the probability that I can hold myself, maybe it's not just the shoulders, but the fingers as well. But that's a bit lower. But if both hands are on a hold and they do a dynamic move, that works already. Okay. So just have to work on those jumps. And, it's that's kind of part of the plan.
That's the next step.
Exactly.
Okay. You told me before that you gained a lot of self-confidence through climbing. Can you tell me something about the mental changes that you realized? The pre-climbing Melinda and now.
So I think I'm just more outgoing. I'm not saying that I'm a happier person, because I think I've always been cheerful. But I'm certainly like I'm not hiding my hand that much. And I think like, you know, I'm proud of what I'm able to do on the wall. So that gives me the confidence that, okay, I'm able to then try things or like go into situations where I think that it might, you know, not work out or something like that, but that it's not going to hurt me because I have a safe backup. There is something that is there for me. Like, you know, some people have their family or something like that.
Yeah.
For me, that's just the feeling that climbing gives to me.
Yeah,
I have my husband and his family that's like a support, but like my family from Hungary, they are supportive, but not necessarily in a way that helps me. And they are also far. That's not really a support system, but climbing. And I don't mean the climbing community, but I just mean climbing, what climbing means to me is kind of something that makes me
feel at home. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so everywhere where there's a climbing gym or mountains, you are at home.
Yeah, I think at many places, but yeah, those places definitely.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, I understand it somehow. So you already said that dynamic moves are hard for you, or you're trying to learn them now. What are other things that fit more your style and things that don't fit your style? Like, are there certain holds that you like more?
Definitely no like? Finger pockets. Yeah. Definitely not on the left side.
Yeah.
I think I'm quite okay at crimps, especially mm-hmm. if they are like kind of like sharp, because my left hand can't hold them. Mm-hmm. I think.
And how does it work?
Because there is a tape, and the tape gets then, you know, there is an edge, and the yeah. tape gets stuck on the edge.
Okay.
And I can also bend it a little bit, yeah. and that helps it to hold it. So then if you just see like some kind of very tiny crimp, I don't need finger power to hold it with my left hand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I yesterday I also got a hole in my hand, actually, from my project, but that was the first time. So yeah, that's why I have the tape. That yeah. wouldn't happen. Yeah.
So the tape is your special power.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think without it would be really much harder. Yeah. And I always wonder why some of the people who have the similar hands, some of them use the tape and some of them don't. And I just think that it just gives so much friction that I otherwise wouldn't have, or like in like sharp edges where it really holds just like super, you would not want to have your skin there.
Do you have a special kind of tape?
I experiment a little bit. There are better and less good tapes. Like, some of them are like slippery and that's not nice, but so I like the ones that are like fabric and soft and colorful. Yesterday I tried another brand that's a bit, I don't know, it feels a little bit different, like not like the normal sports tape that's like so made of cotton. This should also be made of cotton, but this is thinner somehow and sticky, and it's kind of like performance sport tape, but it didn't protect well enough.
Oh, okay.
But it worked really well, so other than that, so I'm still going to use it.
Yeah, you already told me that you like colorful tape and that white tape is just boring.
Yeah, true.
I think it wouldn't work for you then also.
No.
How do you look at a climbing route? Do you try to find out at the beginning if it could work for you, or do you just go in there and see what happens? Or
so one other aspect I want to work on is route reading.
Yeah.
I'm not so great at that, but it's gonna get better. But yeah, I do look at the route, and sometimes I know that it's gonna be like really nice for me. The most obvious things that wouldn't work, it's like if it's overhanging and it's full of pinches and stuff, or the moves are too far away that I cannot span it with my shorter arm span.
Yeah.
My ape index is probably pretty negative.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of like always sad. But yeah, I think there are also certain styles that I like more than others. I like the more balancy type of routes, or like technical type of climbing and not the powerful type of climbing. Yeah, I try to work on the powerful type as well.
Yeah. I think I saw you in the bouldering gym always on slabs.
That's possible, but I mean, I also do quite some overhangs, not like the most brutal overhangs, especially for training. It makes sense to do overhangs. But like the last two times when I got really serious muscle aches from bouldering, it was in my legs. Yeah. Probably from some slabs or something.
Yeah, but that's your specialty somehow.
Yeah, it's easier because, you know, you don't have to hold so much with the hand. The ideal terrain actually is lightly overhanging, like the angle of the speed wall. That's the optimal terrain where I think I can perform the strongest, at least in the gym. Outside, it could be more straight.
Is there any favorite climbing moment that you have that you always remember?
I don't know. So like the World Championship this year was pretty cool. I really enjoyed it, especially compared to the World Championship 2 years ago that I didn't enjoy.
Why not?
Yeah, it was just completely different, like the whole atmosphere and how the whole thing was organized. Like this time it was really professional and, and they put a lot of effort and emphasis that also the para climbing athletes get a similar treatment to the normal, like, I don't know how to say that, like, you know, the lead and speed and bouldering.
That's interesting because there's this movie with Maureen Beck.
Yes.
Where she says that she heard that the route setters at the World Championships set easier for para climbers because the audience want to see them top the route. So is that something that changed because she was criticizing it? Or
no, I mean, certainly not because she would criticize it. I'm sorry. No, but I think they still want to set in a way that someone should top the route. 2 years ago, it was set by local route setters, and I think they had just no experience at all.
Okay,
you know what level we can climb, and and the budget was just way lower, I think.
Okay,
and that makes a huge difference. So they had to set on the speed wall for us, you know, at, on days when there was no speed competition, and that makes it more difficult to make interesting routes. And especially if you don't know the level of the climbers, then it's hard. So the reason I was really looking forward to the World Championship in Innsbruck is because in IMST, I think for 6 years now, there's a power climbing masters competition because it has a different format. So there you climb three routes on one day and three routes on the other day, and then they take the average or like they add up the scores. So it's different from the IFSC format. They do it for 6 years and defying all the rules that there are because they just think it's important and they believe in it. And they believe in that this is a better format, which actually I share. It's also way more fun to climb more routes. So I knew that there would be some expertise in route setting as well. Though at the end, it turned out that the Austrians were not the main route setters this time. So it wasn't the locals who were the main route setters for the para climbing. But the people who were involved were actually experienced in setting for para climbing athletes. So that makes it better. Though I think there is room for improvement. But I think like it was really, I think they did a great job. And also like I really appreciate that the whole organizers just put so much effort into it, that also to make it as much alike to the other disciplines as possible. That made it like a super nice experience. Yeah,
that was one question that I had. So if you feel like the focus is as much on paraclimbing by the organization as on the leads and bouldering competitions.
There is certainly like in Austria, I think 2 years ago, they didn't have a paraclimbing team or like they just started actually. Now they have one with like 15 athletes and things like that. Katarina Sauerwein is their coach. Like she's a pretty good boulderer and all around climber. So like, and that shows also that they take it very seriously. And I think it's not necessarily true for all the countries. I'm not sure. But they really take it like very seriously and put a lot of effort.
I can imagine that it is really hard for the route setters because the kind of disabilities that the people have in paraclimbing are so different, and somehow they have to create routes that somehow fit to all of them. Like in your category, there can be people with only the left hand or only the right hand. How does that work? Do you feel that it's fair for everyone in the competition?
You know, this is like a very slippery slope we are going into. So I have some ideas how you can make it more fair. I think that if you allow for more options and you are not making committing, like your route setting is not committing to certain movement patterns, then it's more fair. I mean, I'm not a route setter, so, but I believe that it's possible to make routes that allow for multiple options. I mean, if you go to a climbing gym, there are like enough routes that someone who is tall can climb or someone who is short can also climb. Mm. We talk about like differences in arm spans, say, or like size.
Yeah.
So if you just put a few more options in there, maybe make the hold a little bit worse, then it will become also difficult, but then it becomes more equally difficult than when you are having a committing move and then you just don't have the right size that fits it. Yeah, that could be improved, but it's really hard because there are not enough competitions for the root setters to get experience with this.
Okay.
I don't know. I think it's also like nowadays root setters love using huge holds.
Yeah.
Because it looks better on the wall. Then they don't want to put a lot of small other things along or something like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's also a style thing. I'm not sure.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. With whom are you traveling to the championships? So I know you are competing for Hungary.
Yeah.
But you live in Germany.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you also lived in the Netherlands before. Yeah. So is there a team that you are in? Are there people?
So I travel alone or I travel with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's, I think, more often alone. But when I'm there, I'm hanging out with the Dutch guys, I'm hanging out with the German guys, sometimes with the Spanish guys. And like, you know, I always just attach myself a little bit to, like, I just hang out with people that I like and I know. And there are like, that's one of the reasons I go, because I just like the community and I just like spending time with the people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not so much that, you know, I want to win or something, but it's just nice to be part of the community. And it's always fun to climb on a route that was set for you. It's worth the travel time. Sometimes it's also like cool places. Like the first competition I went to was in the Dolomites at Val di Fassa or something like that. I think otherwise I would never have gone there. And it's super beautiful. So we went hiking then the next day. And for me, that was the best part of the competition, kind of like to meet the people and also then to explore the mountains around there a little bit.
So it's a good opportunity for you to meet like-minded people, to go hiking, as you said. But it's also quite expensive, I guess. Do you have any sponsors that can pay for those travels?
Yeah, my husband. Yeah, it's like in Hungary, climbing is not big. So they pay for registering me for the competitions and nothing more.
Mm.
So then everything comes from our pockets. But I have a very supportive husband who doesn't climb, but at least he's very supportive of me climbing.
Great.
And I was thinking about trying to get sponsors, but it's hard because like I'm not German. I live here in Hungary. There wouldn't be any opportunity, but then we will also move. You know, you have to be really confident. Like you write to these organizations and you have to sell yourself. And at the end of the day, I actually haven't approached any company or anything because I always have other things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And the probability that they give you what you want is, I think, just not that high.
Mm-hmm.
Then I just rather spend my time on things that are more useful for me. And buy my own stuff, spend my own money. I'm not, then independent. I don't have to do things. I mean, I recognize that it's also a network of opportunities, like to meet other people. It's not just the things that they give you or like the exposure that you get, but that some of the organizations also hold some summits for athletes and stuff like that. I think that would be pretty cool. It doesn't fit my current agenda. So it's not in my agenda that I want to now get some sponsors.
Yeah.
I was working on a project, a research project. I wasn't sure whether I get paid. They told me that I will. And I said like, okay, if you succeed, then the money that I get for it, I can use as my climbing budget. So like then the amount of work I put in there is gonna sponsor my climbing next year.
Yeah, so tell us, what is it that you're working on? So how do you make a living, if not with climbing?
Yeah, so I'm an economist, but more like on the statistics side. So I work with a lot of data and I analyze data. I will finish my PhD next year in development economics, which means that I look at questions in developing countries. So part of my dissertation is going to be about evaluating a program in Mozambique that was providing safe water points, mm-hmm. boreholes to communities, and they also got training to build latrines so that they don't go to the bushes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we as economists come and make household surveys with the people living in villages and mm-hmm. who got the program and people who didn't get the program. And then we compare what has been the effect.
Mm-hmm.
This type of things is mm-hmm. part of what I do. For a living, I mean, actually, I haven't earned money with that in the last year. So what I'm working now is a different project in Mongolia, where a research team has been tracking the movement of nomadic households who mm-hmm. are keeping their, like, going with their animals from campsite to campsite. And we are going to see whether climatic events, like extreme weather events, extreme cold winter or something mm-hmm. like that, what type of effect it has mm-hmm. on the movement patterns. I mean, there are less and less nomadic people in the world, and it's important to understand how climate change affects them.
So now we know what you're doing to make a living and how you pay your climbing. And one last question about the championships. There's only lead climbing, para climbing. Are there also bouldering, para climbing competitions? So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. But it's actually quite deceiving because it's actually top rope, even mm-hmm. if they say lead. So,
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And the thing is that, there are quite some people who would like to have bouldering mm-hmm. competitions. And I think it would be fun because that means that, anyway, you get more tries on the same route,
mm-hmm.
Which can be fun. But the problem is that some of the categories cannot are not allowed to climb without a rope because they cannot fall.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot do then that some categories are allowed to do it without mm-hmm. a rope and some not. So that's quite limiting. And the number mm-hmm. of bouldering walls that would allow this.
Yeah,
I know that in the UK at their competitions, they also have bouldering and then they have the rope there. It's a bit weird construct mm-hmm. to boulder with a rope.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is also like if you read through the IFSC plans and stuff that there could be speed competitions
mm-hmm.
Also for paraclimbing. I mean, not the same speed route. Mm-hmm. I think not all the people would be able to do it. But I think it's way, way too far. I think... There could be bouldering, but I don't know, like there are already not so many competitions because someone has to be willing to organize it as mm-hmm. well. Like mm-hmm. a few years ago, there were a few of them, quite a few. And then it's like it fluctuates. Sometimes there is money for it. Sometimes there is not or willingness. Yeah. And people have to be devoted, I think, in general, to want to do these type of things.
Yeah. You were talking about the speed climbing route. Did you try the speed climbing route?
Yeah, we mm-hmm. have a speed climbing route at the DFO climbing.
Yeah. And how did you like that?
I mean, I used to climb it before, but then always statically. And now I try to climb it dynamically.
Yeah.
And so the first time a few weeks ago, I actually tried it on time. It's fun. I think it's a lot of fun to climb it. Also, if I want to improve in dynamic moves, then it's actually really perfect for that.
I never tried it.
Now that you have done top rope climbing, you're allowed.
Yeah,
you're not afraid anymore.
I
you can just come by. I could do a session at the DFO climbing hall.
Yeah, that's going to be our second training session then.
Exactly. You have to mix it up.
Yeah, make it a little bit more interesting. So I also wanted to talk about training or being a trainer because you are a climbing trainer. That's really interesting because, I don't know, when did you decide that you want to become a trainer and was it hard to become a trainer because people thought, okay, you can't be a trainer with just one hand?
No, it was not. I actually I'm grateful for all the people that believed in me that I can do it. It's like, it's really nice when people believe in you.
Yeah.
So it made me able to do it. But to go back to the beginning, I always wanted to work at a climbing hall because we're at the climbing gym in Amsterdam. It's like a really cozy place, and I very much liked being there, and I thought like it's such a cool thing to work there, but it was mostly students doing it. Mm-hmm. And I had another job at the time, so that wasn't really possible. So when I moved to Berlin, I was still just climbing here, and a year later or something like that, I was like, oh, is there something for paraclimbing? Like, I heard that there is supposed to be some competitions in the world. Do you know about it? Then they didn't know so much. And then I took it as a kind of as a challenge, mm-hmm. not as a challenge, but it motivated me to, okay, then I still want to find out about it. And I sent some emails, figured out how to, what competitions there are and how I can participate. So I had to register in Hungary to be able to go there. And once the competition season was over, and then, okay, I showed something that what I can do, I was feeling that I would like more people with a disability or a different ability to try out climbing also in Berlin, because climbing just means so much to me and has given so much to me. Mm-hmm. Then I started organizing a park climbing day that was very much supported by the DFV, but I had to do most of the work. While I was organizing this event, then I got to know the people in charge at the DFV climbing hall here. Mm-hmm. My climbing partner at the time, whom actually really cool person, started climbing when he was 60. Yeah. And we climbed at the same level at the time. He was 65 at the time. So that was pretty cool combination, yeah. The two of us. But he was also doing a course to be able to give top rope and lead climbing courses, mm-hmm. At the climbing hall. And I was like, oh, that's cool. I also want to do that.
Yeah.
And then I talked to some people and figured out that I can actually could do the full training, which would also not only be the belaying part, but also the climbing technique part.
Yeah.
And then it was also quite much supported by the person in charge of the climbing hall. He thought that I would be able to, you know, give top rope and lead climbing courses in German, teaching a belaying device that I myself cannot use.
Yeah.
So I so much appreciate that trust.
Yeah.
that made it possible for me to enroll in the course. And at the end, it was actually not even a big challenge to accomplish it. There was just like one hurdle. Most people have to be able to use two different belaying devices.
Yeah, and you only use one.
Yeah, because any of the other ones I cannot use in a secure way.
Yeah.
They let me just use Grigri, made an exception. And then like already a few months later, I was employed at the climbing hall.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a power climbing day then in between. That was pretty successful. We had like 50 or 60 participants in the first year. Yeah, like people just coming for the first time, or like some people who have been climbing before as well. And the German park climbing coach was also there, and some of the athletes from the team.
Yeah.
So that was also nice. And one of the members actually like joined through that meeting. He doesn't live in Berlin, but he also came by, and then he lost part of his arm in an accident.
Oh.
So he climbed before already, then he picked up climbing again, and now he's a core member of the team. So it was a really successful event. And after that, there were also some people who were interested in continuing with climbing. Then we started organizing first more informally and then more formally these paraclimbing meetings on Fridays. That is now like every weekend, it's still running. That was part of my responsibility to do that, but then also to give top rope courses and these introductory climbing courses and lead climbing courses. Apparently, my German improved throughout from the beginning till now, because yeah, you have to do it in German. And I have to practice. I only speak German when I talk to climbers. So today is kind of an exception.
That's funny.
I don't need it anywhere else.
Oh, okay. You started this paraclimbing day. Now you have these regular groups that you train with. So you see, I guess, a lot of good development of these people that you introduced to climbing, so you must be pretty proud.
It makes me happy to see that they are having fun climbing and also that they are getting better at it as well. It's really nice to see. So we taught them how to belay, and now it's also like trying to teach them climbing technique that would help them to climb more efficiently or to be better at it. Everyone has a different type of disability. There are people who have who are spastic, or people who have vision impairment, or people with MS. So before there has been a woman who lost both of her legs below the knee. So she had two prostheses and she came sometimes as well. Actually, I met even one guy who had a similar hand like mine. But sadly, climbing didn't fit in his life at the moment.
Yeah.
But I'm always happy when, you know, more people come. And it's funny because we don't really do any advertisement, but still somehow every now and then someone comes by, someone new. And either they stay or they don't stay. But it's always nice to see new people and that they try it out. Because if I honestly think back about my beginnings, I also didn't stick with it at the first time I tried. So, you know, maybe it's just not... There are so many things to do in Berlin. It's like difficult to compete with all the possibilities.
Yeah.
And if they have tried it and they had fun, then maybe at one point they still go back to it. The people who do come regularly, that's also like really cool to spend time with them and to, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. How hard is it to imagine how other people with other disabilities could become better, how they could climb?
So there are standard things that you would tell to anyone with or without a disability. Sometimes some of the things are harder for me to think about, but I mean, I'm not the only person doing this. So there are also some other really awesome trainers who have been at some of these sessions, and they then give different tips, and that helps also. So like when I talk to the people who are regularly there and they have had trainings with different trainers, they learn something else from everyone. So in that sense, it's nice. Though, yeah. Like from my perspective, it would be nicer if it would be like a smaller group of trainers who regularly are there and try to focus on the development of the people and not just like come occasionally.
What was your best moment as a trainer?
So one of the things that was like was really touching my heart when someone who was in my course came to me at the climbing hall and said like, oh, when are you doing the top rope course? Because I want my wife also wants to learn, and I would like her to be taught by you. I think that was one of the touching moments. But I mean, I'm also like really happy with my paraclimbing group when they succeed in something. And especially there is one guy who is vision impaired, but he is also colorblind. So it makes it hard for him to climb a route without touching other things.
Yeah.
So now he's... I told him that he should take the speed route as a project. So it was pretty
very
cool.
Very clever.
Pretty cool. I coached him through the whole route. And for me, it was really cool when he made it to the top. I mean, he didn't climb it without a rest yet all the way through. But I think it's really close now. Mm-hmm. But just because he didn't believe that he can do it. And then, you know, like you give all the tips and and you know what you have to do. And then he gets up at the top. It's cool that I'm able to give tips to other people.
Great. One weird thought that I had also when I first saw you climbing in the bouldering gym is that, okay, she's doing a route that I can't do. And do you sometimes think when you see people climbing, oh, come on, why can't you do it? I can do it too. So do you have this thought?
No, I mean, no, not that thought. I have the thought sometimes that there is this route that I cannot do, and people who have completely no climbing experience come and they are able to do it. Mm-hmm. I just can't reach the things.
Yeah.
But I have to just, you know, like there are many other routes. No, it's like, it's like sometimes I forget that, you know, I train a lot and I put a lot of effort in there, and therefore like I can climb at a much higher level, and and many people just take it as a pastime or as a hobby, and like I could say, yeah, it's actually easy, but then it's also easy because I'm training.
Yeah.
I'm getting stronger, but it's, for me, the inspiration is more from people who are stronger and realizing that actually, like, given the level I climb, physically I'm really weak. And people, like some of my friends, say that, no, you're so strong. But like if you would check up, like, you know, like normal strengths, like, you know, push-ups, pull-ups and all these type of things, I think I'm on the very weak side. So it's a lot of climbing technique that makes me climb. And therefore, like at the moment, my limiting factor is actually like strength, so I have to get stronger.
That might be a goal, because I know that you are going to, or that you train for the next World Championships too. So, yeah, is that now your main goal as a climber, or what are you looking forward to?
No, actually, it's not a main goal at all. It's something that's there and I really want to do it. I realized, I only trained like 1.5 months because I was traveling here and there. And when I was training, I realized that how much it helps and how much stronger I can become if I train more. And I'm just really curious what is the limit, or like how far I can go without getting injured risking my life and stuff. No, I mean, I'm talking now about outdoor climbing when risking the life. But yeah, so I want to take the next year to see how far I can push myself and how strong I can become, because then I'm kind of put myself that maybe I want to start a family. And then I know better what was the level where I was. And it anyway, if you are stronger, then it's easier to come back to like a decent level after like the child is born or something. It's a bit unfair that women have to give up so much. But
I know that thought.
Yeah, especially because my husband doesn't climb. So, you know, like he wouldn't lose so much out. But that's how biology works, so it's all right. But so climbing goals is I want to climb more outside. I really love hiking and wild camping, and you know, just not the thing that sport climbers do, like I'm way too impatient to just, you know, like try the project once or twice, okay, three times maybe a day, and just have a project, and like you are doing the same thing and you are in this beautiful area, and I just want to do many different things. And I'm very bad at sitting on my butt and just chilling. Like I always have to do something. I think it's kind of like also a challenge to learn to like let go and just chill, but I think it's not the challenge for next year. Next year I would rather do some alpine climbing or something like that, and to learn more about trot climbing. I would love to do some multi-pitches, and I mean, there are some destinations where I would also like to go, and we'll see whether that will work out or will not work out.
Yeah.
But so one of the things was like, I had this question, what is my climbing goal? And the climbing goal is always like climb in Norway, because I love Norway. I love going there wild camping and stuff. And it's just so beautiful, like climbing in the fjords. I was at a climbing shop the other day, and then I saw the climbing guide for Lofoten, where I really like being as well. It's not really for hiking though. And then I just had to buy it. So it's for that I would have to learn a lot of new skills, because it's mostly trot climbing. not necessarily my favorite style of climbing.
Climbing is exciting.
Yeah, I don't think like for me climbing is about climbing movement and like all this crack climbing and all these things and also the these corners or something like the Verschneidung in German.
Mm-hmm.
They are not really my favorite style, but I mean it would be beautiful there and pretty challenging and yeah. I mean, you can do different things, but that would be certainly one objective as well for me.
Okay.
Not for next year yet, but you have to train to be able to do it, to learn the techniques.
Yeah, yeah. In the end, I would like to have some training tips from you. I think you have some. You are a trainer. So the first question is, can you name three things that made you a better climber?
Oh, I think that's the most important, to have fun. So number one, just because I have so much fun climbing.
Yeah.
And number two is because I'm quite a committed person and I will fight until the end and not give up. Mm-hmm. I think that also makes me a better climber. And the third one is that I had to learn a lot of technique to compensate for the lack of my fingers. Like all these balancey stuff and the feet technique and stuff like that, that not everyone does. Yeah, yeah, that's the summary.
Yeah, that's the balancey and foot technique stuff. Is there any tip you can give me? How do I become better at it? Or is it just do it?
I mean, so one of the things that when I started climbing, someone gave me was that you actually have to focus on the feet and then you should move three times with your feet before you move with your arm, which I don't think is a very useful like technique climbing tip, but I did try to follow. And then in slabs we also with my friend we tried to climb easier routes without the hand. So then you are only using your feet. I think that also helps because then you have to balance a lot. But I think in general what helps also with foot technique is to down climb. Because then you're always looking at your feet and you have to place it and stuff like that.
So try to be exact when you down climb.
Yeah. What we talk about, feet technique and stuff and balancey things. For me, what was very useful is when I started lead climbing and then I always had to clip. And to clip, I had to be in a stable position. And because I cannot hold on so much with the hand, I had to learn to find positions that are balanced and that are not too strenuous. It's also super exciting because like if I climb in a hard route, it's like just 2 centimeters a bit further to one direction or further to the other direction makes the difference whether the move is going to feel easy possible or impossible. And it's just so interesting.
Yeah.
But I don't know exactly like... I think body awareness a little bit. Like,
Are there any exercises you can do off the wall that give you a better feet technique or leg technique?
I think maybe someone would say you should do slacklining. But I mean, there are quite some exercises. You could also try to climb with something on your feet. Like you put something
on your feet that
it shouldn't fall down.
Ah.
So because then you should be precise with your feet. Uh-huh.
Did you try that?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. When we had the course, this was one of the things we tried. Like it was outdoors. And so we just took some small pieces of stones and we put it on the climbing shoe.
One thing that I am also very interested in, after I saw the movie of Maureen Beck, I already told you about. In this movie, she's making a little bit fun about people, saying that paraclimbers are so inspiring. She says, we want to be seen like any other climber, not as something that's special and much more fascinating or anything.
I think it's like a US thing.
Yeah.
I don't know, like I also read some other things like people saying the same, but I personally, I don't know, I mean, culturally or something, I don't find anything bad about it. Like I'm also inspired by other people. I'm also inspired by some people who have a handicap. I'm also inspired by people who don't have a handicap. And, you know, it's, if someone sees me and thinks that, oh, then I can also do it, or like that I should be able to do it, or I want to get better at it, or like if it helps, then yeah, it's okay. I mean, I want to inspire people. I want more people to climb. Otherwise, you know, I wouldn't be doing all these things. And yeah, whether it's someone with a handicap or not, it's it doesn't matter so much. And if it's a positive thing, right? Yeah.
Okay, so go on with that.
Let's see.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
That was my interview with paraclimber Melinda Wieck. I hope you enjoyed it. And I guess you would like to see her climb now. I put some links into the show notes where you see her climbing the IFSC World Championships and also her Instagram account where you find a few videos. Have fun with that. If you like this podcast, I would be happy if you shared it with your climbing buddies, subscribe to my podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, or any other podcast app, follow me on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. And you could also support me via Steady. That is a platform for independent media producers where you can financially support your favorite blogger, podcaster, or YouTuber. This helps me a lot. Thanks for all your support, no matter in which way. Goodbye and hear you next time. Juliane mein Name und ich bin Beck Bouldern.